Susan, thank you. And we join you today from Cork for the first of our European election discussions. We're in the Ireland South European Parliament constituency. It's a sprawling constituency. It includes the counties Carlow, Clare, Cork, Kerry, Kilkenny, Limerick, Tipperary, Waterford, Wexford and Wicklow. And we're joined today by five of the 23 candidates in this constituency. We'll be hearing from more of the candidates in a report on the constituency later on. But with me now in the studio are Billy Kelleher from Fianna Fáil, John Mullins from Fine Gael, Michael McNamara, Independent, Susan Doyle from the Social Democrats and Cian Prendeville from People Before Profit. You're very welcome, all of you, to the programme. And a full list of candidates can be found on the RTE website. But I want to start today with the issue which has dominated the news in recent weeks and indeed today as well, and that is the issue of migration. The government has said that Ireland will sign up to the EU Migration Pact, which has four pillars. They include securing the EU's external borders, processing asylum applications faster, a solidarity framework which requires countries to either make a financial contribution or agree to relocate some asylum seekers from countries which are facing particular pressures, and also enhancing partnerships and sharing information on returns and readmissions. Cian Prendeville, if I could start with you. You're from People Before Profit. Your party... The policy of your party is that Europe should open its borders, that Ireland should end direct provision, and that there should be no more deportations. And considering the fact that we have hundreds of people living in tents because there's nowhere for them to go right now, is that a policy which you think voters want?
Well, let's be clear, it's disgraceful that there's anybody living in tents in this country, Irish or foreign, when there's 160,000 vacant properties. That is a political choice that's being made by this government to leave people sleeping in tents and to be harassing those people, moving those tents. We've seen it before, Irish homeless people, their tents being taken down, torn down by councils, intimidating and bullying homeless people, when actually what we should be doing is saying, no, these vacant properties, 160,000 of them, we need a use it or lose it policy. We should be bringing those vacant properties into public ownership and using them to house people. There's no reason for there to be anybody in tents in this country. We are a rich country. The problem is that the government manufactured a housing crisis by refusing to build public homes for 15 years, essentially, by lifting the eviction ban, by putting people out on the streets, therefore. And now, rather than addressing the housing crisis by taking on the corporate landlords, by bringing into public ownership these vacant buildings, the government and their far-right friends are trying to point the finger of responsibility at the refugees, at migrants, at poor people.
But when you see opinion polls, like a recent poll in the Sunday Independent showing that 50% of people actually want checks on the border with Northern Ireland, and that 50% includes many nationalist-leaning voters, doesn't that tell you that your policy is out of line with what people want now?
No, I think what people want is people want people to be housed. They want nobody having to be in a tent. They want nobody to be skipping any queues. They want a fair and reasonable policy. But I don't think there's any politician in this country that should be supporting the reintroduction of a hard border, separating Northern Ireland from the South, requiring border checks, opening us up to all of that hassle and problems again. We've been fighting for years against DUP and Tory attempts to reintroduce a hard border. I think it shows how un-nationalist, really, how anti-Irish, really, a lot of these far-right people are, that they're trying to separate and divide our country. Let's be clear, we should be stopping the migrant crisis that is being created. But it's being created by the EU, it's being created by the US in driving people into poverty, fueling wars in the Middle East, in fueling poverty, famine across the world through climate change. That's how we address the climate, the refugee crisis, is by stopping destroying people's homes in the global south and stopping funding brutal dictatorships that are doing these crimes.
All right, Susan Doyle from the Social Democrats, you're a solicitor who deals with immigration issues. Do you support the decision of the government to sign up to the EU Migration Pact?
Some aspects of the pact are welcome, I think, such as the solidarity framework, and obviously faster processing times would benefit everyone. But I think there's been very little debate at a national level, and the government is trying to push through all parts of the pact in one vote rather than allowing votes on each individual provision.
So which parts then would you not support?
There is definitely issues with border detention, for example. We don't know enough about what the proposals are for border detention. We don't know, will people be locked up in a kind of prison-like conditions, or will they be free to come and go? We don't know where those border detention facilities will be. That's very, very concerning. We don't know if children will be allowed to get an education when they're in those detention centres. They could be there for up to 12 weeks. So I think we need a lot more clarity before we sign up to a pact where we don't know what the outcome will be.
Amnesty International has said that the EU Migration Pact will result in a surge in human suffering, will lead to the detention at EU borders of vulnerable people, including families with children and victims of trafficking. Does that concern you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you agree with them?
I think it could very, very well do. You know, border detention, as I said, we don't know what it's going to look like. And that is very, very concerning. I don't think it's right to push through a pact where there's so many unanswered questions at this point and how that will look.
OK. John Mullins from Fine Gael, are you proud of the way that your party has handled the immigration issue in this country so far, with hundreds of people living in tents, the rise of the far-right movement and a very polarised society, all under the watch of a Fine Gael justice minister?
Well, the first thing I would say, Justin, is that, we're talking about human beings, not animals. And I know Michael's going to come up with a whole ream of statistics and numbers, by the way, when these people actually are people probably with different colour and probably with different religions. And the reality is that we're not the only country or the only region in the world that is subjected now to significant migrant movement. We have an open border of 500 kilometres between Lough Foyle and Carlingford. We worked for 3 years with the Brexit introduction to hold on to that open border. And I have to say, I find it difficult to understand why people would like to reintroduce checks.
Okay, but can you deal with the question? Do you accept that your party, which has held the justice portfolio now for 14 years, has failed to properly prepare for the numbers of people who would come here as asylum seekers? You don't accept that?
I don't accept that.
So you think actually, they've prepared properly?
No, I think what we have seen actually in more recent times, and the statistics, I suppose, speak for themselves, there has been a ramping up of people coming across the border from the UK. The threat of Rwanda is a critical issue in that regard. And frankly, the Taoiseach, as he wrote in the Sunday Independent today, has made it very clear that he will not tolerate state agencies not allowing lands available to put up new housing and accommodation for these human beings who basically are coming across the border. It is critical that this country also works with other European countries to ensure that there is a stable migration pact, that there is a database set up under Eurodac, and that there is appropriate enforcement. And by the way, when it comes to detention centres, Ireland won't be left wanting with respect to the quality of those centres.
But you started telling us that people should be treated like people and not like animals. I mean, according to Amnesty International, the EU Migration Pact would lead to a surge in human suffering, and that's what your party wants to sign up to.
And Justin, the fact that there will be a deterrent at the borders will mean that the traffickers will not win. And in many cases, the people coming to Europe, by the way, and the people coming across the Mediterranean are coming with traffickers, by the way, illegally. And these people have to be stamped out, and there has to be a deterrent across Europe for this activity.
Currently, 3,000 people die a year in the Mediterranean. How many would you like to see that raised to?
I'd like to see...
Do you think there's not enough people? Currently, the Sean Binder from this constituency, from Ireland South, an Irishman from Kerry, is facing trial for rescuing drowning people from the Mediterranean. He's accused of people trafficking for rescuing drowning people. They're saying that it's criminal to save people from drowning. That's what the EU is doing.
The vast majority of people are being trafficked out of North Africa and from the Eastern Mediterranean. The reality is you cannot blame the Irish government for those activities in the Mediterranean.
All right. I want to bring Michael McNamara in here. Michael, you've been highlighting problems with Ireland's immigration system. Do you now welcome the fact that there is a decision of the government to sign Ireland up to the EU Migration Pact, which would see an agreed set of rules for Ireland to follow?
Well, look, the Migration Pact isn't one piece of legislation. It's 10 pieces of legislation. The government proposed to sign up to 7 of the 10. We're not going to opt into the Returns Directive or the replacement of the Returns Directive because Ireland isn't in Schengen. That's one of the many areas where there's a problem in Ireland. It's one that I've asked Helen McEntee questions about at the Justice Committee. She didn't have answers at the time. Just regarding John and his swipe about statistics, the only statistics that I have are statistics that I've obtained from the Department of Justice when the Minister is minded to release the statistics. I'm just a backbencher asking questions. That's my job to do so, to ask questions of the government. I don't see anything wrong with that. I certainly don't apologise for holding the government to account. Going back to the Migration Pact, I think there is a problem where the government propose to have just one vote. I mean, there are 7 pieces of legislation. It's been made clear, I've asked the justice officials, is there any legal reason for that? They said there isn't. It's a political decision to have just one vote.
So the government, parts then of the 7 pieces do you not agree with? Which ones would you say no to?
Well, at the moment, we very clearly have a problem accommodating the numbers that are claiming asylum. Now, the reason that we have a problem accommodating them is because of delays in our asylum system. If you have more and more people going into a system and that system isn't functioning, that system isn't processing people at the rate in which people are applying, well, then a problem is going to build up. No matter how much direct provision you provide, there will be a problem unless you're resourcing decision-making to the same extent as you're resourcing.
We are increasing the resources.
You're increasing the resources.
Yes, we are. We're increasing the resources.
Yes, you
acknowledge that.
I acknowledge that you're increasing the resources. But I say that you're not increasing the resources at the rate in which applications are increasing. So the backlog is growing. As we speak, there are 21, at the end of April, there were 21,600 people awaiting a first instance decision. After that first instance, 25% of them waiting over a year, over 500 of them waiting 2 years. Now, after that first instance decision, there's a right of appeal. After that appeal, if you're still unsuccessful, there's a right to apply for permission to remain. People are accommodated throughout that, and they have a right under international law to be accommodated while they're in the asylum system. But it doesn't make sense to me.
So what's
not
your solution,
to be,
Michael?
My,
what's your solution?
My solution is to resource the decision-making system to the same extent that we are seeking, that the government is seeking unsuccessfully to resource providing accommodation for people, because we have to get people through the system and out to the other end where it's determined that they either are fleeing persecution and have a right to stay, or they're not fleeing persecution and unfortunately do not have a right to be in the state. Now, there are people who don't believe in state borders, and that's a perfectly legitimate ideology to pursue, but we live in a world where there are state borders, and the Supreme Court on several occasions have said it is a key aspect of the sovereignty of any state to determine who is allowed into the state and on what conditions. Now, we allow people into the state to claim asylum, as is proper, as is right. But we have to have a fair asylum system, but it has to be efficient. And unfortunately, not everybody is going to be able to stay, because if you're not fleeing the condition in which you're allowed enter is to claim asylum. If you're found not to be fleeing persecution, then you do not have a right to stay.
Okay, I want to ask Billy Kelleher about that. Billy Kelleher, do you think the system for processing asylum seekers in this country is under-resourced, is poorly resourced, and that we have failed to prepare properly for the numbers coming in here?
Well, look, there's been a huge increase across Europe on irregular migration movements. In fact, in 2023, there was about 380,000 irregular presentations at the EU border. So it is a new phenomenon that is really, you know, putting all of Europe under pressure. We also had the Temporary Protection Directive, which allowed, you know, Ukrainians fleeing Russian aggression to come into Europe. So that has put huge pressure across the entirety of the migration systems in the various countries. I supported the Migration and Asylum Pact for a number of reasons. We should have uniformity across Europe in terms of how we assess, process and support both migrants and asylum seekers, and more importantly, the countries themselves, so that they can resource the application process, so they can resource the determination process. At the moment, we don't have enough in Ireland or across the entirety of the European Union regarding the numbers of people who are employed in the public service, in the civil service, around the processing side of it.
But there is a provision in the EU Migration Pact for Ireland to pay other EU countries rather than accepting asylum applicants into this country from their primarily the Mediterranean countries where they're under pressure. What would signing up to that pact cost Ireland?
Well, it's the solidarity clause is what you're referring to. It is not the numbers that people claim to be. This is in the event of there being a larger increase in what we would consider normal migratory patterns, whereby if a country is under significant challenge, well, then it can request support from all the other member states. And then a solidarity mechanism kicks in, whereby you can either receive some...
And what's the cost?
Well, the cost is 20,000 per asylum applicant.
So do we know what the total cost of that would be?
Well, the projections today that the solidarity mechanism would be in the around 630 people. 630, over and above what we are already taking in ourselves at the moment.
Mm.
So it is in the event of there being a major increase in a country that is under significant pressure, where, and we fought long and hard to get a solidarity clause across the entirety of the European Union. You can't have a situation like we reference detention centres. There's detention centres already all over Europe. There's in Greek islands, in Lampedusa, there's tens of thousands of people clinging to rocks, sleeping in plastic tents, sleeping in the open. So we have to try and accommodate and make sure we have the resources in place to assess and process their applications. But more importantly, when they do arrive on our shores, that we have somewhere to put them.
All right. Susan, you wanted to come back in there.
Yes, thank you. I've been working in the area of immigration since 2018. And quite frankly, in 2018 and 2019, there were people waiting 2, 3, 4, 5 years for decisions. And this is before a surge of migration, and it's before COVID. So I really can't understand how you can say that you're investing in it now and this is going to fix everything. I mean, this pact is not going to come into force until 2026. What are we going to do for the next 2 years to fix this problem? And can I just finish? People are still waiting for years and years for decisions. It needs investment in the International Protection Office. They have to be able to make decisions quickly and efficiently. The pact has nothing to do with that. This is completely down to investment in our international protection system.
And that investment has been made. And you can see quite clearly from the commitment from the Taoiseach
today. How can you say the investment has been made when in 2019 it wasn't working?
That commitment has been made.
But in 2019 it wasn't working. There was no Russian migration then.
But the numbers that have come into the country ever since, by the way...
But in 2019 there was hardly anyone.
You have to add the number of Ukrainian refugees that are here with good reason, as a result of fleeing war, fleeing Putin.
But they don't need to be processed.
No,
they're automatically granted refugee status.
The Taoiseach is committed to have faster processing times, to have more resources, to have more state lands available, and to have deportation in the event that people do not qualify to stay.
But if it wasn't available in 2019, how could it be available now to this faster processing? What are you doing to actually...
The issue has exponentially increased, and it has increased because of the British government's Rwanda policy.
There's no evidence of that.
Can I just say, Justin, look, I mean, the Migration Asylum Pact has been passed by the Council and the European Parliament. It will be up to individual member states to legislate according to their obligations. In that... there was also a requirement to put in place processing mechanisms and make sure that they are adequately resourced around timelines. That is up to member states to do now. But the important thing is at least we have the potential to have a uniform system across Europe. What Ireland needs to do now is to get in line with Europe with regard to the amount of safe countries that, you know, we have about 8 or 9 countries at the moment. The Netherlands has about 18 countries that, you know, we allow asylum applications from. That, for example, being Georgia, was a case in point. We are slowly catching up with Europe in these particular areas. But what we want is uniformity so that we don't have a push factor all around Europe. They're going from one country to another and trying to move around within Europe. That is wrong for the individuals, and it is wrong for the system as well.
Michael McNamara, do you think there is a case to be made for expanding the list of safe countries?
Look, the reality is that when you expand these numbers of safe countries, the vast majority of people who come from Georgia, like there are people who come from Georgia who are given asylum, the vast majority aren't. Yet the vast majority of people who come here from Georgia come here to work because Georgia was a state that 20 years ago was wealthier than Ireland. If you're going to do that, you have to create legal pathways.
Okay,
as
but
well.
What's your own position? I mean,
my position is that we have work permits where skilled people who have certain skills can come here to work. Yet people get a work permit from the Department of
of Enterprise and Department of Justice block the visa because they think they know better.
Right.
On the other hand, there are lots of people who are not coming here for skilled employment where there's a shortage of work.
Okay.
Lots of Georgians come here for that. The only way that they can come here is to claim asylum. Then they're in the accommodation system, they're in the asylum system, there's a huge cost to that. There has to be a parallel system of legal pathways for people to come here in circumstances where we have a burgeoning right. economy well, and a shortage of labour. John, we have everything, but we're
issuing work visas every
you,
year.
You are in the department.
Certain employers who can then exploit them.
Because
they are tied. They are indentured to that one employer and therefore they are threatened. If you do anything to annoy your boss,
right.
not only can they sack you, but they can deport you.
Okay.
But that is unfair. That's leading to exploitation and driving down of wages across the
Before John interrupted me, I was making a point that, yes, we're giving work permits for skilled persons, not for unskilled, but even of the skilled people, the Department of Justice are refusing to give a visa to... fair point, but it's considered not to be skilled by the Department of the Environment.
These are the people that were essential workers during COVID, that were keeping our shops running, that we need on our construction sites, day labourers, whatever. Everybody is a skilled worker. Everybody can
Justice
add.
Are declining
just like the Irish added when we were in America. Everybody can add to the wealth.
Can I make a point without being talked down?
I want to move on to another area, and that is the area of defence. The European Union has a plan to use frozen Russian assets, billions of euro to buy weapons for Ukraine to fund its defence against Russian aggression. John Mullins, do you support that plan?
Well, I want to start by restating the government's position with respect to military neutrality. And, you know, we're absolutely committed to that.
We know the government's position in relation to neutrality.
Understood.
I'm asking for your
understood.
View. Do you support the decision of the EU to use frozen Russian assets to buy weapons in Ukraine?
I have a difficulty with the European Union buying weapons for any campaign. You know, the reality here is that we are a militarily neutral country. That doesn't mean that we're politically neutral.
Who should fund the war in Ukraine then?
Well, the funding of the war in the Ukraine, there's been assistance, as you know. 50 billion, by the way, was sent across from the European Union to Ukraine. We had a number of MEPs, sitting MEPs, by the way, who voted against that. And Ukrainian people have come to me and said, you know, why did Irish MEPs vote against an aid package for Ukraine when all we want to do is go back to the country?
But you're saying that you're opposed to the sending of Russian frozen Russian assets, billions of euro, to buy weapons for Ukrainians to defend themselves against Russian aggression. Is that correct?
And that's holding the Irish position around military neutrality.
But
we can't be seen that we as a military neutral country, by the way, are contributing to a fund in any way that's buying weapons for the Ukraine. And that is the government's position, in my view, that we must remain militarily neutral.
Is that position tenable if every country in the EU and globally were to adopt that position? What would happen?
There are other neutral countries, by the way, who would have similar positions with respect to this across the European Union. And all I'm doing is stating the very fact that this country wants to remain militarily neutral.
Billy Kelleher, do you think that's a tenable position for Ireland to adopt, to abstain on that in relation to that position of sending money to Ukraine to fund so that Ukrainians can fund their defence against Russia?
Well, what's not tenable is not to support Ukraine. That's the most important thing. From my perspective, I have always called for the seizure of Russian assets and wealth funds that are outside. We'll just been asked a question about Ukraine. We'll get on to Israel in a minute if you want to. Okay.
Yeah,
thank you very much. Well, you're actually not running the programme. As Mr. McCarthy's asking the questions, so I'll just talk about Ukraine. So I've always supported that concept of seizing assets. The European Union would only be facilitating the seizing of the assets. It would be Russian money that would be used to purchase the equipment. So it's Russian money. It's not European money. European money is used to fund the Ukrainian state at the moment in terms of keeping the lights on in hospitals, funding civil servants, paying doctors, paying teachers, paying nurses. We provided about 50 billion in the last vote for that purpose. But I am very much supportive of the concept of taking as much from the Russian state as is possible, seizing assets from the oligarchs and from the state itself.
Even to buy weapons?
Yes, because it's Russian money.
Yes, but that's not Ireland's position. That's not the position of your government.
No. But the position of our government is that we do not, Ireland does not support
does not support the purchasing of weapons, right?
Yes, but you're saying you do support that.
No, no, no. The European Union is seizing the assets. It is Russian money will be buying the weapons.
And Ireland and the Irish government is abstaining in relation to
that. Yes, we abstain on that. Yes. We abstain on that purpose. But it is not EU citizens' taxpayers' money is purchasing the weapons. It is Russian assets that are seized by the European Union. Russian assets that are seized by Australia, by New Zealand, by Canada, by Japan, and all the other countries across the world that are seizing Russian assets. So it's not European taxpayers' money, to be clear.
Cian Prendeville, if you were elected as an MEP, what position would you take in relation to the use of Russian money in Ukraine to fund Ukraine's defence against Russian aggression?
I think the notion that one more surge of weapons is going to solve this is mistaken. I think we've seen this war being fueled now for years with public money, European money, not EU money, but European money, US money, fueling weapons to this war, and it's just fanning the flames. And I think actually Ireland has a unique role to play in trying to be advocates for peace, trying to push for the ending of this war, to stop fueling this war and try to push for peace to end this.
If the Ukrainians had no weapons, that Putin would now be at the European borders and inside in Kyiv and would have taken over the entirety of the Ukraine.
How much money do you think will be needed to end this war? How many more weapons? How many more Ukrainians must die? How many more Ukrainians must be conscripted into an army that they don't want to be in to fight for that? I think we must be pushing for an end to this war.
Ukraine is a democratic country. They have elections.
They have a conscript army. I don't think that's fair.
Well, when you're at war, you know, normal rules.
Would you support conscription in Ireland, Jeff?
If Ireland was invaded?
You'd support conscription? Forced conscription? And then what should happen to people that don't join the conscript army?
I want to give somebody else a go on this.
I'm not trivialising. This is a very serious issue. There is an attack on neutrality taking place, not just in this, but in relation to Israel. You talk about you're not supporting EU money going to armaments. EU money goes to arming Israel as it stands. The Israeli military companies get money through the Horizon Europe project. The EU is funding the Israeli military as it stands.
I want to ask Susan Doyle from the Social Democrats about this. Is Ireland's position here tenable? The government supports Ukraine. It opposes Russian aggression. It supports the defence of Ukraine in several ways, and yet it abstains in relation to this issue of using Russian money to pay for Ukraine's defence of itself. Is that a tenable position?
I think it is. I think I would advocate for Ireland's military neutrality, and I'd be seeking to ensure that Ireland can maintain an opt-out in relation to any defence pact. We have a strong history of peacekeeping in the Lebanon and Congo, and we should maintain our position as peace broker, I think. We do need stronger voices on Gaza, I would agree on that point. Different countries throughout the EU can have their own defence policies. Ireland has been neutral for a very long time, and I would absolutely be supporting that we maintain that position.
Right. Michael McNamara, the Irish government is providing €122 million to fund food and medical supplies for Ukraine. Is that the right thing to do?
Yes, I think it is. However, that money is going into a European peace fund. It's the same titled fund that buys the armaments for Ukraine. I mean, I do think that it's somewhat Jesuitical. I think Leo Varadkar himself called it Jesuitical to sort of pay money into a fund and say, well, the money that we're putting into the fund will be used for food and defence helmets, flak jackets, etc. Whereas the money going into the same fund from other countries will be used to buy armaments is somewhat artificial, but I don't believe that Ireland should be funding weapons in the Ukraine, nor do I believe that the Irish Army should be actively involved in training an army which is at war. And if it is to do so, I think it should do so with the support of Dáil Éireann, because I think it is participation, albeit indirect, it's participation in the war. And the Constitution requires the Dáil to pass a motion. If we're to send our troops into a situation like that, I believe that we should at least stand behind them with a Dáil motion.
Final question to John Mullins. Do you think that Ireland should increase, should be spending more on its own defence, should spend more to defend its own territory in relation to defending our skies and defending our sea borders.
Well, there's already a commitment actually by the Irish government to double our spending on defence. And there are real issues with respect to recruitment into the defence forces, and there are heavy recruitment campaigns going on as we speak, Justin. I also, by the way, wish to acknowledge our defence forces that work overseas on all peacekeeping, right, by the way. And frankly, you know, it is a very, very useful service that we give the world by sending our troops abroad on peacekeeping. The defence forces will be invested in, and I know that the Chief of Staff has welcomed the level of investment that is going to come.
All right. OK, well, that is where we must leave it for now. My thanks to our guests in studio, Billy Keller from Fianna Fáil, John Mullins from Fine Gael, Michael McNamara, Independent, Susan Doyle from the Social Democrats, and Cian Prendeville from People Before Profit.